Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Welcome to the Bear Grease Render. This is going to be a good one. It's been a while. I'll tell you who I got around me here. Gary Believer Newcomb, it's been a while since you've been here. Good to have you back.
Yeah, I thought I was fired.
Well, did you stop getting your checks?
We thought maybe you were too, but turns out you weren't.
Well, I told Bear, I said, you know your daddy's really desperate when he calls his Mina guy up.
Yeah. No, good to have you back.
You still got your retinas, or did you burn them out in the eclipse yesterday?
Hey, I'm fine, man. Okay, I couldn't see good before, and I still can.
Yeah, so yesterday was Mina, where Dad lives, was in the path of totality, so we went down there. Pretty incredible experience. We'll talk about that. I'm gonna skip over my two mystery guests. Bear John Newcomb is here. Good to see you, Bear.
Good to be here.
You ready for turkey season? I know you are.
Yeah. Been doing a lot of scouting.
Yep.
So hopefully we can make it happen this year.
Yep. Got Josh Lambridge Spillmaker here to my left.
Good
to see you, Josh. Josh and I are wearing the same hat. We didn't coordinate, but we got the same First Light hat on. It's a good looking hat.
It is a good looking hat.
I want to make a hat like this with a Bear Grease patch.
I'd wear the heck out
tan.
Of that.
Tan.
I'd wear the heck out of that.
Our guest, though, I've got Luke Naylor. Why don't you introduce your position, Luke, with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission?
I'll be happy to do that. Yeah, I'm the Wildlife Management Division Chief for the Arkansas Game and
Wildlife
Fish Commission.
Wildlife Management Division, Chief. And yes. So you oversee for the Arkansas Game and Fish all the different, like all the turkey projects, bear projects, deer projects, duck projects. You're all those biologists and people's
correct
oversight.
Yes, we're divided up. We've got about 14, I think, what we call program coordinators, which what I used to be as a waterfowl program coordinator or bear program coordinator, turkey, all those the ologist type positions we've got, and then also all our wildlife management area staff.
Yeah.
So we've got 7 different wildlife management regions and several different staff out there doing WMA work.
Yeah.
Along with a whole lot of other things on top
and you
of
were WMAs. You were the waterfowl biologist for 16 years here
16
in Arkansas.
Years. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost 2 years now since taking the switch over here to the, to an office jockey, I guess, an administrative role. So
did we get you out of any meetings today?
Yeah, I got to cut one short, but let's make sure our boss doesn't hear about that too much.
This is very important public outreach.
It is very important, and it's talking turkeys, so I'm passionate about that.
Man, I want to talk some turkeys. We need to introduce our mystery guest. Luke's been here before. Nathaniel Maddox from Lebanon, Missouri, not Lebanon.
Lebanon.
You'd be tempted if you were just driving through Missouri to say,
looking for a case knife.
Where's Lebanon, Missouri? Lebanon.
That's how we spot a newcomer. They say Lebanon.
Yeah. Nathaniel is from Lebanon, Missouri.
Yep.
And tell us what you do, man.
Yeah, so I'm a filmmaker, own a company called Slate and Glass, a production company, and we've been established in my hometown of Lebanon, Missouri since 2014. Moved back there after starting the company in Seattle, and ended up back on the family farm.
So, Slate and Glass. There's a turkey hunting. Those are turkey hunting words.
Yeah, and they're production words as well. Like
really,
glass for lenses, and a slate is the little action.
Well, is it? So, was it meant for turkeys though?
Both.
Oh, it's a double entendre.
Yeah.
It's one of those artsy Seattle things. If you'd have really been from Missouri, you'd have called it turkey video work.
Yeah.
That's right.
But slate and glass, double meaning. I like it.
Yep.
So you've been in full-time video production for 10 years with your own company.
Actually, I had a company before that. I started in 2010 that I sold to a guy in Seattle. So since 2010, so 14 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got to get this on the table. Nathaniel, the reason I know Nathaniel, we have a mutual friend in Isaac Neal, but the main reason that your name has popped up in my world the last 10 days is that your company made the film The Colonel and the Fox for Mossy Oak.
That's right.
Which came out April 4th.
Yeah, last week.
Yeah. And that film... Golly, man! When I saw the trailer for it, I was in Mississippi turkey hunting. I saw the little 2-minute trailer, and I was just like, "That is gonna win." I was like, "That film is gonna be good." I could tell just from the quality of the trailer, but also the content. So, Dad, so Gary, the believer, has not seen this film. The film is about. Toxie Hayes is the one who started Mossy Oak. His father, Fox Hayes, is how old is Mr. Fox?
He was born in 1930. So I'm going to do some quick math.
He's like 93, 94, 92. Yeah. The film is a documentary about his life, but also the documentary of a man named Colonel Tom Kelly, who they call the poet laureate of turkey hunting. He wrote a book in the 1970s called The Tenth Legion, which is an incredible turkey hunting book that kind of shaped turkey hunting culture.
Yep.
And these two guys are still alive, and they'd never met. But the story is about them, but it's really about their lives and the restoration of the wild turkey and their influence on the restoration. I probably should let Nathaniel tell me this.
Yeah, he probably might have a little more
knowledge.
What
if Nathaniel was my guest? He drove down here and he never spoke. I just looked at him and talked about
what
he did.
He's actually over here mouthing to you what to say.
I've known Nathaniel for like 8 minutes. Let me tell you about this guy. I mean, he is from Seattle. He's got his, what kind of shoes are these?
These are PF Flyers.
See, okay, this is the first.
This is the first.
Now, Bear's got some interesting shoes, too, though, that Gary made a few comments about. These lacrosse.
I'm never the guy with
deck boots.
Cool shoes.
Ocean blue shoes. But no.
Those are cool.
So I could talk about Nathaniel. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, so really, it's been an overwhelming past week. So trying to figure out where to start. I've been working with Mossy Oak for a while. It's a company that's been important to me since I was a kid because my parents got a satellite dish in 1995, and the first thing I got introduced to was TNN Outdoors. And so on Sunday afternoons, there was all of a sudden these hunting shows, and hunting the country was one that I gravitated to and watched all the time. So I grew up watching these guys turkey hunt. They taught me how to turkey hunt. I live on a cattle farm. in Missouri, and there's turkeys all around me, but I don't know how to kill them, and my parents don't know how to kill them or hunt them. And so those guys taught me how to do it, you know. And so I have a stack of VHS tapes that I actually recorded, you know. You hit the play and the record button at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And all these years later...
Wait a minute. Was that a technology hack you just threw on us?
There you go.
What do you mean you recorded them?
Off of the TV, you know, you run the
TV
into...
Like pop the VHS and record it off
the
TV. Well,
I'm glad the statute of limitations is gone.
Right. Yeah, there you go. All these years later, you know, I've been working with the NWTF since 2016, doing a lot of the content for them, because turkeys have always been a very, very important part of my life. Turkey hunting has been.
Would you say turkey hunting is the main thing you're interested in out in the outdoors?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's it.
Slate and glass.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I love to bow hunt and do a lot of different things, but turkey hunting is just, for whatever reason, has grabbed a hold of me, you know, since I was a kid. So, over the years, I've gotten to know Toxie and Daniel and Neil and everybody at Mossy Oak, and done a couple commercials, 30-second commercial spots for new products and things. And they had come to me and said, hey, we got, you know, Papa Fox and Mr. Tom Kelly at camp together, and there's a couple guys that grabbed some footage, but we're not sure how to put the story together.
Oh, so you didn't film that part?
I did not, no. So they came, Daniel and Neil came to me like maybe a year ago, and they said, we've kind of got this collection of footage. The camp was one of them. We had a couple of other interviews with Tom Kelly's daughter and a couple other people, and asked if I would kind of take on the, you know, responsibility of figuring out how to make a story that honored both of these guys. And started going through that footage, and then I got really deep into the weeds with putting together this big storyboard, and I'm like, man, maybe it can be a 30-minute film, but it feels like there's a lot here. And so I started, me and my guy started doing more interviews, and really decided, you know, yes, this is a story about these two guys that have been turkey hunting since the 1940s, and not too many people can say that, but a lot has happened since the 1940s in America as a whole, in our culture. And so how did not only this idea that these turkeys were almost gone when they started, and now we've got this beautiful thing called turkey hunting and a population that all of us get to enjoy. They came through that, but they also came through World War II and Vietnam and all these other things.
Right.
And so my goal kind of became, how do we tell the story of the wild turkey through the eyes of these two guys who are still hunting now, but also through the eyes of America, you know, like our culture and how it's shifted and changed over the years. And it ended up becoming an hour and 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes. And
man, you did there by connecting the restoration of this turkey to people is really powerful. And I mean, I think that's a key component to just all of our endeavors as hunters to show a non-hunting public, which is becoming increasingly important in the sustainability of what we do, is that the non-hunting public understands and is empathetic towards us and sees the real value that we bring in so many ways. And man, anybody would watch that film and just be like, wow, I kind of get it, you know, because you just see these guys who just dedicated their lives to turkey hunting. But then you also see the human effort involved in the restoration of the wild turkey, and specifically these two guys in different ways. I mean, like Tom Kelly was more influential at a cultural level in writing this book that put words and put some he helped build the turkey hunting culture through this powerful work of literature. And then through Mr. Fox, who was more hands-on in some ways of getting turkeys brought back in and released into Mississippi. But you just see their lives. And Dad, in the film, it's like a documentary in a way about America. Like, they show World War II, and Colonel Tom Kelly was in World War II, and it shows, I don't know, is that a good description of it?
I think so. I mean, I feel like, in my head, we're all very unique people. We all love to turkey hunt, but that's not all of us, right? Like, it's not, the whole of who I am is not just a turkey hunter. And I wanted this film to show that. And I think that sort of connects people who maybe not turkey hunters to understand a little bit. And we had a we had a really cool screening down in Mississippi, and everybody from Osse Oak was there, and it was really fun. And they were like, hey, you need to do one in Lebanon. And I'm going, man, we've got like the Ritz 7 theater. I hope it's still standing kind of thing. And
yeah.
So we had a premiere last week and 200 people there or something. And a lot of them came out because they were our friends and family. But it was cool to me. So many people who know that I'm obsessed with turkey hunting, but they're just kind of like, oh, that's just what this guy does. He always has. Coming up to me and being like, I get it now. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And a couple people who I never thought would ever want to hunt were like, I might want to try this. To me, that felt like a success, you know, people in my community who were going, I get it, you know? And so if we could create a piece of content that makes someone who doesn't hunt or doesn't understand hunting have a little glimpse into what we're passionate about, then I feel like we've done something cool.
Have you made feature length films like that before?
Not that long, no.
How long did you work on this?
That's a good question. So, I was thinking about that on the drive up, like how many hours went into this? I started really, really focusing on it hard early December. And I think I finished it at the end of February.
Oh, for real? So this isn't like, I thought it was like a year. I thought you were going to say, oh, we've been working on this since 2022 or something.
Well, we were doing archiving and research work probably since June through December. And then when I finally got what I felt was all the pieces of the puzzle, started putting it together. And it was, my wife will attest that there are a lot of nights when the kids went to bed and I ran back over to the studio until 1 or 2 in the morning because I have other clients too. But yeah, I wanted to put everything I could into this project because for me, it's like turkey hunting is the most special thing that I know of when it comes to relationships with people, you know. That and my faith. Obviously, my faith is first, but turkey hunting is this way that I build relationships, that I maintain relationships, I spend time with people I love. And so I knew this was my opportunity to really like sort of put that into a story. And I wanted to pour everything I could into it. So
what did y'all think about the film, Josh?
I thought it was fantastic, man. I really appreciated getting to see, because I didn't know all the history of the reintroduction of the turkey. So I love being able to see all that old footage. And, you know, you get the impression of you know, you think about market hunting and then you think about hunting in the around the turn of the century, even into the 50s, that was, you know, you just went out and you hunted, you know what I mean? You hunted anything you could to watch these guys with such a commitment to bring it back in the work. And I mean, even looking at the turkeys that they were releasing, they look so scraggly, you know what I mean? But it's produced this thriving population, obviously population decline in some areas, but we actually have a turkey population thanks to these guys.
Yeah, even in the current woes of the Southeast and specifically here in Arkansas, we still got it pretty darn good. I mean, compared to what they had, I mean, we're all you know, bummed out about our turkeys here in Arkansas, but dadgum, we still got it exponentially better than what they had in the 60s, 40s, 50s, you know.
Big time. But,
Dad, how aware were – when did you kill your first turkey? The 80s?
No. I think the late 70s.
Yeah. There was that Polaroid picture of you and a guy holding a turkey that I remember being your first turkey.
Yeah, it could have been early 80s.
How aware were you of the restoration efforts going on?
Not too much.
It's just kind of like there's turkeys and people are hunting.
Yeah, yeah. And I took a interest in it and, you know, learned how to call. You know, when you were a little guy, I was always going around the house calling.
Yeah.
So.
This relates to Bear. Luke, how old are your kids?
Almost 16 and 13.
Do they do some hunting?
Daughter is now, she's decided she's an angler now.
Okay.
Yeah,
I sent Josh a picture of that little Dry Run Creek trout not long ago. So she got hooked on fly fishing last summer in Colorado, where I learned to fly fish. My son kind of comes and goes on it. We've done some dove hunts, a few duck hunts, and we'll go turkey hunting this year a couple times. He's not tore up with it like Bear seems to be at this point, but there's a spark there.
Okay. Okay, well, this is the reason I asked you that, is when I was a kid, Bear Newcomb, burritos are ready. It was like, I was like in military school to learn how to call turkeys. I remember you were just like, you got to learn how to call a turkey. This is the PhD in hunting. And I remember I was so proud of myself because one time I was working for Buck Titsworth, a construction project, and I saw a turkey in the guy I was working for backyard. I was 16. I saw a strutting turkey like down the hill. I'm working. And I had a mouth diaphragm call. And I walked around the house and got on the other side. And that turkey strutted in. And I came home and told Dad about it. And he was like, let me hear your call. And I, quack, 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 quack. And he was like, yeah, that's okay. Yeah, I remember you being like, I don't know if that'd work on a real wild turkey, Clay. And I was like, Dad, I called him up. I mean, he was a backyard turkey. It was a real wild turkey. It was a wild turkey. But it was in his backyard.
How can you be sure?
But point being, Bear needs to work on his turkey call. And I'm going to bring in the Gary Newcomb critique and be like, buddy, you got to get on the wagon.
You're about to run through the gauntlet, my friend.
I mean, he's called man, up and killed rough. Turkeys. But man, when you're down in Mississippi, an 11-year-old kid in Mississippi can outcall grown men in most states. And so, Bear, we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I remember.
I hope all that made sense. I probably none of that may have made sense. It made perfect sense in my head.
Well, from my perspective, I could call in a bird, but I wasn't that great of a caller. And I taught Clay what little I knew. And within a week, he could call better than I could. I mean, he had a natural ability to do it. It might not be.
And now I'm the best caller at Meat Eater. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
proven.
Anyway, you had a knack for it.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Personally, I like to push myself in both directions. I like to have more social interactions than maybe I would naturally want, but I also find time to be by myself and recharge sometimes more than I want. Talking with an unbiased person like a therapist, I think can really help you set boundaries and can empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Grease. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives. And the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people.
Well, when I go to Mississippi, I don't even call. When I'm around all those guys in Mississippi, Lake Pickle, Jordan Blissett, Keith Polk, I hunted with Brad Ferris the other day, and I've just shut up. I don't even call. I'm serious.
Yeah, when you're in the presence of greatness, just keep your mouth shut.
They can hoot and gobble and yelp. I mean, it's crazy listening to them on the video.
Well, and that kind of comes back to his film.
Yeah.
I've decided that, and as much as I, you know, I'm prone to be very biased towards the state of Arkansas, I believe that Mississippi is the cultural epicenter of turkey hunting.
Yeah, it is.
I believe that. Everybody in Mississippi, Luke, has written a book about turkey hunting.
Hey.
If you lived in Mississippi, you'd be like, hey, Clay, Merry Christmas. Here's a book I wrote about turkey hunting.
One of my best memories ended up living in California, met a Mississippi boy, and we're friends to this day. And he introduced me to the old Pro Turkey Hunter book. Which we'd read every season. Once I got to know him, and we turkey hunted together a lot out there in the Coast Range and the foothills and such out there. That was my first introduction to the. It was remote, right. Removed from Mississippi,
but it was a
Mississippi boy, born and raised.
Wow.
And I understood maybe not fully like you have now, but I got a pretty good taste of what it's like to be a
Could
Mississippi.
Could he out-hoot with his mouth?
Didn't do much owl hooting, no barred owls out there when we were hunting, but we'd do it anyway because, I mean, they're turkey or gobbler, whatever. But I'm not going to say that he would win the owl hoot contest, but I'm not going to denigrate him by saying, like you've done with Bear's turkey calling here, and say that he couldn't pull it off.
See, Dad now's talking good about my turkey hunting. All I remember as a kid was it like
– It was no good.
Like never measure at it.
Yeah.
Are we in the middle of turkey biologists in Arkansas right now? We don't have a turkey biologist.
We have one starting Monday, which whenever this comes out,
the opening day of turkey season.
Yes, correct. Yeah, the opening day of turkey season. Although
he's going to call if he doesn't call in that day and say I'm busy, I'm not buying into him.
You know, I had a guy call me a friend, and I still to this day he's kind of a prankster, and he called me up Sunday night, the 7th, and he said, "Man, I'm getting all my stuff laid out to go turkey hunting." I let him go on for about 5 minutes. He'll listen to this. And I said, "Man, are you just trying to get a game warden to come find you tomorrow morning?" He said, "What do you mean?" So, adult turkey season starts the 15th, not the 8th.
Oh,
and
wow.
He said, "Well, I'm glad I talked to you." And I still to this moment don't know if he was just pulling my leg. I really don't know. But yeah, our new guy starts April 15th. He's coming out, he's finishing his PhD at North Carolina State, studying turkeys up in Appalachia. So, he'll be green, but he's coming in, and we're ready to have him hit the ground running and keep things going that Jeremy got rolling here for a while. Got a pretty good stable place here with our turkey management program right now. We've had some support to kind of keep things stable, keep our turkey regulations kind of set here for a while. He alluded to it a little bit ago. It's a good place to be that we definitely are not at a point where anybody's worried about losing the opportunity to hunt turkeys.
Yeah.
Anytime in the near future, we're not going to lose turkey populations again like we did back, nearly 100 years ago, 80 years ago now. But we are definitely in a place, as we all know, that we're in a decline. It's maybe at the bottom of it. Don't know for sure. But it's definitely gotten rougher for everybody, for turkeys and for turkey hunters. But it is, the good news is it's still a lot of opportunity out there, still a lot of turkeys. is just not quite not as a slam dunk. Boy, late 90s. I'm a self-taught turkey hunter, too. Nobody in my family turkey hunted. And, you know, wanted to just got passionate about it when I was early teens and taught myself how to turkey hunt. Probably watched some of the videos you were talking about. Same deal. Primo's True stuff. I don't know when that started coming out, but the same.
Yeah. Also from Mississippi.
Also from Mississippi. And it's hard to say now that, boy, we kind of learned when it was easy.
Yeah.
I think if we're honest with ourselves, I think we did kind of learn when it was easy.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Late 90s, early 2000s, boy, it was, you know, when I was going to undergrad at Kansas State, boy, we'd go out and duck hunt in the winter, and it was flocks of 200-plus burrs in every creek bottom, you know. And that's just not the way it is anymore. Mm-hmm. Probably won't come back to being that, but we're still going to have turkeys.
What can you lay out, like, simply what is the turkey? Is there a way to verbalize the turkey management plan in Arkansas? And I mean, can you do that?
Yeah, I mean, we're always focused on habitat first, right? Trying to continue. That's a long term thing.
And that's working with Forest Service and
private landowners.
So in Arkansas, we have quite a bit of national forest, which Game and Fish works with Forest Service on some of that land or all of it.
Then
we have state-owned land like Arkansas Game and Fish, WMAs.
Correct, which a lot of that's in the Delta, which is less, it definitely has turkeys, but less so than the western part of the state, which is the hill country. Most of the public land there is national forest land. We got some awesome, large wildlife management areas in the Ozarks, in the Ouachitas as well.
They're not that good, though.
don't come.
No, don't.
I mean, come here. But
I won't name any names at all because I know better than that. You know, people still find places to find turkeys on public land. And it's a long-term issue to keep managing habitat.
So managing habitat would be burning.
Thinning.
I know there's a lot of places where they're planting food plots. I mean, like specifically for wildlife, but turkeys too. Like,
right.
what would be habitat work that Game and Fish is managing?
Yeah, so long term, we're trying to push habitat toward desired forest conditions, desired conditions. So this kind of terminology we use in habitat management, where you have here's what we think this habitat should be, and you can debate that for months, but let's just take a look at it. A lot of times go back to the GLO records. What is that? General Land Office or whatever. The early records of when first settlement, when people go to survey trees and they'd go take every section, they'd assess it. And those records are out there and available. They're really, really fascinating to look through. And if you were to summarize it real quickly, it'd say there's just way too many trees. Which is funny when you're talking about turkeys, but there's like the whole Boston Mountains you drive through up in northwest Arkansas. I mean, that's a second growth forest that was the Ouachita records talk about folks driving covered wagons with never having to dodge any trees, right? You take a wagon train through it. It was so open, so much grass cover. So most of our forests are too dense, which support fewer numbers of species. So we're talking about all kinds of critters, not just the ones we like to hunt. But all sorts of different wildlife use this diverse forest ecosystem that had lots of forb and grass and shrub understory with, you know, overstory pine and oak, depending on what slope you were on. And generally just a lot fewer trees and a lot more fire.
So the fire, do y'all, so I see quite a bit of fire. I've seen quite a bit of burns going on this spring in National Forest. Are y'all asking them to do that, or is that Forest Service that's wanting to do that for timber management?
Forest Service, I'm not going to speak for them, but a lot of what they do throughout the country is fuel reduction fires. So that they have an objective to reduce fuel loading across.
So it's just kind of happens to be that's good for turkeys too.
It can, and it's maximized when there's some sort of forest management practice done in cooperation with
cutting
the fire.
Trees.
Yeah, you cut trees. You know, thin things out, let some grasses grow up, then develop a burn regimen after that. Then you kind of reset that forest to back to a more diverse, better, you might say, that's a judgment call, but a little better system, for lots of critters. Just burning without thinning has reduced benefit, you know, because it doesn't have the same sunlight on the ground.
Yeah.
The sunlight means diversity, and the sunlight helps regenerate stuff that may have been shaded out by an 80-year-old oak tree that everybody thinks is a virgin forest, maybe, right? Nobody's ever been here. Human beings never touched this place. Well, you know, most of the records of the Boston Mountains in northwest Arkansas was prairie. I mean, it was there's a what's Pea Ridge National Military Park up here is a good representation of what things probably looked like in the Civil War era. Wide grasslands, open spaces, and most of it was cut over and now just shaded out by too many trees. But that and just trying to maintain...
Now, that prong one would be habitat.
Habitat. It's always habitat.
I stopped you there.
Yeah. It's always habitat.
What would be other things, like season dates?
Yeah, you try to work on that and try to maintain some stable... you know, we've had what most folks would probably consider later turkey seasons here recently in Arkansas, but some stability in that so we can start to understand the impacts of different things, whether it's wet springs, right? We know we had a bunch of them the last 10 years that we know aren't good for ground nesting birds.
Yep.
But it's hard to tease that out if season structures are changing a little bit. And you're starting to see more states at least talk about and try to implement a later season start, right? More people are going toward that now because we're doing some neat stuff that we can hopefully talk about, you know, 12 to 18 months from now about goblin cryptology, looking at autonomous recording units, ARUs. You hang them up in a tree and they just record sound. And then you can go in, some algorithm finds out, it's a turkey gobble, and you can go check it. So we're going to have unbiased data on goblin cryptology across the state.
Can you send me some pins of where the...
I probably won't do that, Josh, but I'll make sure to screen the data before we write a report on it. That's going to help us understand goblin chronology because you're really talking about almost on purpose trying to hit the second peak of gobbling for birds, like let birds get through that first peak. It's frustrating as a turkey hunter sometimes.
When they're doing their breed.
You hear them doing it, their lek building, their harem building, that whole kind of stuff. Boy, they're noisy. They can be really susceptible to calling at times. Other times, not at all, of course. We all know turkeys, but... That's kind of by design, is to make sure all that stuff gets done.
Yeah.
And then we start going out and removing males from the population.
Yeah.
So
habitat, season structure, is there anything else?
And we just keep the monitoring work to try to keep making sure we have contemporary information on what's going on with turkeys. So, you know, we've done gobbler chronology work over the years. It's funny with a lot of things we've done with like dove call counts, there's been quail and pheasant call counts all across the country for years. It's kind of funny to watch those trends over the years and a bunch of old men going out and doing these surveys. It's funny, those indices drop over time. Well, guys can't hear anymore. So you kind of, like we say,
that's true.
We say bias, but I don't mean like somebody purposely doing something, right? This isn't somebody faking data. This is just reality. When you have a human observer.
If you sent me out there, I would report that all the turkeys were to the left. I would be like, I don't know what happened.
They were all over here.
Chief Wildlife Officer Luke.
Because he's deaf in his right ear.
But all the turkeys were always to the left, no matter where I was standing.
Now we have the technology to remove the human element from it.
Yeah.
And so, but we haven't done a real goblin chronology work for, I mean, almost 20 years now, where we systematically had people go out and run routes with different levels of hunting pressure, with different habitat types, different ecoregions. So now we're working on this with these ARUs. A lot of states are doing this now because it's a really cool way to figure out, okay, what is the actual breeding chronology? If you think goblin chronology means breeding chronology, like what is it really across the country? Because we've all got our own stories we can tell. But this should be really cool for a lot of states across the country to have this information the next several years.
Wow. So the new guy starts Monday, right when John Calipari starts for the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Yeah, that'll... Well, yeah, I'm not sure which one will give him the most press. Time will tell, right?
I had a little scenario in my head when I knew that you were going to be here, Luke. And for those who aren't paying attention to college basketball... John Calipari from Kentucky is now going to come be the Arkansas Razorback head basketball coach. And there was a lot of press about that. There's a lot of mixed feelings in the state about it. And I thought, wouldn't it be something if it was just as big a deal about who the new Arkansas turkey biologist was going to be? And the equivalent of bringing in John Calipari, though, for the Game and Fish. And if y'all had a marketing team doing this, you could have created this environment. Like if you'd have brought in like Craig Harper or the turkey doc, Mike Chamberlain. Yeah. And it'd be like, whoa, Chamberlain's leaving Georgia and coming to Arkansas. And like people would be mad and people would be fired up. And
would have been a lot of posts about that.
Yeah.
probably going to have fewer about our new turkey biologist, if I had to guess. Yeah.
Well, but it was a fun little game in my head. Well, for just a few minutes. You know,
good luck with Calipari. Well, they couldn't get Kansas State's coach. That's my alma mater.
I know.
So.
And
good
our new turkey biologist's name is?
You're going to make me say it. He's got a last name that's hard. Pronounced David Muskicki. He's gonna get mad at me. It's got a lot of consonants and so David Muskicki. I think
we'll have
how
to get him to come
that.
On the Razor at some point.
Yeah.
Well, you're getting ready for Missouri Turkey Opener, Nathaniel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next Monday. Yeah. Same as Arkansas.
It is. Yeah. 15th. It's typically 15th. They're in alignment. Yeah. We've already had a really good turkey
y'all
season.
Y'all have pretty good numbers of birds where you're at.
It's been a lot better. This year, I've seen so many jakes, which has been a huge deal. And I've got my family farm where I live. I've been hunting turkeys there forever, so I have a pretty good idea of how the population's doing, at least in Laclede County. And it's been really nice to see this year. And we had a good youth season. My son got a bird and one of his buddies. And
just this weekend?
Yeah, just this weekend.
Really?
And then
they gobble good this weekend?
It was great, yeah. It was a really, really good weekend. And then before that, my son and I went to Florida and he got his grand slam. So
Oh, really?
That's awesome. It was a big deal. He's 9 and he's been on the road a bunch with me turkey hunting over the last few years. So that was a cool moment.
Did you do any turkey hunting when you're out in the Northwest?
A little bit, yeah. Man, as soon as turkey season hit when I lived there, I was ready to get on a plane and be in the Ozarks. You know. So because I love being here in Kansas and just kind of our little spot. But we go to Wyoming every year, which is my favorite.
Oh, really? Turkey out in Wyoming?
Yeah, Merriam's. We have a spot there that we go, and it's close to South Dakota, but I look forward to that. We usually do Florida and Wyoming, and then wherever else I have to go for work stuff. Yeah. Hmm.
Luke, are you hunting anywhere out of state this year?
Yeah, we'll go to, we'd kind of make a loop through Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, been doing that for going on 15 years. Kansas side of stuff. And I had some work trips that worked out very conveniently several years ago for Nebraska, then took a little break in that. And then, so go back to Missouri. We'll kind of make a whole circuit, go there, hunt for a few days, go up to Kansas, Nebraska, hunt for a few days, drive back. If we want to spend a couple more days in Missouri, we will.
Will you get to hunt Arkansas at all?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Will you?
Yep. I plan to hunt a little bit next
week. Where are you going?
And then, good question. Well, I will never answer that question. I joke with a lot of people.
Luke looked at you in the headlights.
Yeah,
I was like, wait a minute.
I thought we had an understanding. Yeah. But no, like two living people know where I turkey hunt. And one of them will go on that trip with me. So that's how we treat turkey hunting spots, right? So
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I public land in Arkansas. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Public land in Arkansas.
And then after turkey season, Luke's getting on the boat and we're going to go fly fishing.
We'll go fly fishing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm ready for that. Yeah.
Which of you listening right now took a class in school about Family Finances 101? No one? Yeah, me neither. Like the importance of a will or college savings plan or even life insurance or estate planning. We have to know these things. But how do we figure it all out? That's why I'm excited to partner with Fabric by Gerber Life. Life insurance is important to me. It just gives me security in knowing that if anything happened to me, my family would remain financially stable in my absence. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You can be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/bear. That's meetfabric.com/bear. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people.
So the Turkey Stories episodes that we do, truly some of my favorite episodes to put together. Mainly just going and meeting. I meet face to face with almost all these people. Occasionally, if I run into somebody that's that has professional equipment and lives a long ways away, they record their story. But 98% of the stories I've ever had, I'm sitting across from somebody and they're telling me stories. And there's a lot kind of like looking behind the curtain and kind of like we did with his film, like. You may hear a 4-minute story on the episode. I was there with that guy for an hour and a half, you know, yeah. Like talking about turkeys, and you kind of just have to like whittle it down. But this was the second episode. Which did one story stand out to you, Nathaniel?
I mean, as soon as you started talking about that Honda Big Red 3-wheeler, that took me back to being a kid again.
You had
man.
A picture of a Big Red of
that's right.
Of Tom Kelly on a Big Red.
That man, that was nostalgic. I was like, man, we all had those when we were kids, you know.
Yeah.
Yacht. That story to me was awesome. Just well, he got shot, and then he didn't even tell the guy.
Exactly. Would you have known a David Ellis before?
I know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Mississippi boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a different way of life down there for turkey hunting in Mississippi.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I thought that story was really, and he's a great storyteller. So.
Oh man. Yeah. He's a pro. I mean, like he actually goes around and does like public speaking. So like he's told that particular story a lot of times, you know? But it was, that was wild. When he first told it to me, I actually had to, here's behind the veil. He told the story, and it was unclear to me at first whether he was trespassing or not. And I was like, wait a minute, this guy just told me a story about trespassing. Like, I can't use this. And I said, wait a minute, were you trespassing? And he was like, no, I wasn't trespassing. And he went back, and I actually edited out my question took his explanation of not trespassing, dropped it in to like the climax of the story, and you'd never know it. It for an editing nerd, it was like, oh, that's good.
Well, you're really telling how the sausage is made.
Yeah, for real. Because I didn't want it to. I didn't want people to question what had happened. But it was real clear in the story, right? Like he.
Oh yeah.
He crossed this big ravine, went up there, was bushwhacking these turkeys. He wasn't even calling them because it was the last day, and he was just like, man, I got to kill a turkey. Gets shot in the face. It was, yeah, it's wild. It's a scary story.
Yeah, no kidding.
Scary story. Luke, which story do you like?
Well, I always enjoy listening to Andy tell
Andy
a story.
Brown.
I think I can tell a story like really, really well. One thing, maybe going back to last year's, you did turkey stories last year too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I've noticed about all of them, and nobody – I don't know if I've ever heard anybody tell a story about a small turkey.
Yeah.
It's always
big
old gobbler. Yeah. Every one of them is a big old gobbler. Yeah. Every single turkey story told. But I always enjoy just listening to him talk. I always typically learn a new word or two.
Which word was it?
What did he say?
Tumped?
Yes.
Tumped.
Yeah.
Tumped. I was trying to figure out how that spelled. T-U-M-P apostrophe D.
Got it right.
Tumped. I had multiple people bring that up.
It's true, though.
Did that blip on your radar when he said tumped, like that would be an unusual word?
I've heard him talk so much. I think I was just
you know the dialect.
Yeah, I didn't. It never even crossed my mind that was an unusual word, and I had many people say they'd never heard "tumped over." But man, tell you what, Andy, I said it on the podcast, but Andy is number. Well, you could be a great storyteller and not be that competent in hunting. That's one possibility, which is fun. I mean, that's great. You could also be very competent in hunting and not be a great communicator. You could also be a good storyteller, competent, but not funny. Andy has like all of it. Andy, I'd put Andy Brown up against any turkey hunter in the country. I mean, for real. For his home turf. And everybody is, you know, Andy's one of these guys. He's not like hunted all across the country. I mean, he's just dedicated to.
You're saying skill wise,
just for if you were to say, yeah, for where he hunts, you just couldn't be much better.
Yeah,
I mean, you just send out 100 guys and say bring back a turkey. I mean, there's people that are as good, but like he's just good. But then he's just a very good storyteller, and his dang laugh. I mean, he laughs
he's got
at
that
himself.
High pitched giggle.
Oh gosh, yeah, Andy, what a guy. Okay, I keep going back to Andy's house and saying, Andy, we're going to have to do it again, turkey story, and he's like, Clay, about run out of them. I go to his house, I heard three new stories I've never heard, and I actually held them back. Any one of those stories would have been as good or better than any story that I put on there. I mean, it could have just been Andy's story time. So I saved them for next year. I told them, I was like, I'm just going to put one on, and then next year I've got two in the hopper that are incredible stories. So anyway, oh, Andy, yeah, he's a lot of fun. But, Dad, which one stood out to you?
Well, what impressed me was they were all so good. The first one, I thought, well, this is going to be the best. Then the second one, you know, so all the way through. But Russ Author, I really loved how that came together. I mean, it was unbelievable. In fact, it is unbelievable. But I've heard you talk about him so much. I mean, it happened.
Yeah.
And then I finally decided that the yacht and Poe Daddy.
Yeah.
Poe Daddy.
I forget the story. Anybody that has those nicknames. I mean, these are the coolest guys I've ever heard. I mean, they got the lingo, and I mean, when Yacht gets to talking, it's like he's in a road race.
Yeah.
You know, I'm after they started out, you can't even hardly keep up with it.
Yeah.
I had to replay it three or four times, and I go, man, I was going to try to repeat it in here, but it was just amazing storyteller.
Yeah.
And when you say he's a pro, you probably wouldn't know it unless somebody told you, but when you really think about what he's saying, how clear it was, how entertaining it was.
Yeah.
An amazing guy. Yeah. And they'd have names like, how many people do y'all know that have goofy names like that? I mean, Yat Yat.
Y'all, y'all, Po Daddy.
And they call Po Daddy because, you know, he's too cheap to rent
him. Yeah. He said, Po Daddy ain't poor. He's just cheap. Like, we save $10 and get a hotel with one bed.
So I guess Po Daddy was my favorite.
Yeah. David Ellis has to be at the top end of natural voice mouth callers. Like his gobble, just him being able to, oh. I mean, there's probably people that are better, but not much better. I mean, I guarantee you he'd be at the top end of with his owl hoot. I actually put a video on the TikTok that got like 1.2 million views, and it was me just standing there saying, David, gobble, owl hoot, do your, you know, yelp, and just, he can just do it. I love it when guys
that's
can do that.
Impressive.
Sound effects added a lot to the story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the Russ Arthur story, you mentioned it, but I'll rehash it. That was an incredible story. And Russ, oh man, there's never been a straighter string on the earth than Russ Arthur. I mean, I love the guy. I mean, and he, such history. He's the one that told the story about his father passing away. His dad, I think, was about, his dad passed away, I think, in 2014, same year Lewin Newcomb passed away. And his dad was a significant player in National Wild Turkey Federation over in East Tennessee, and was one of these guys kind of like Fox and Tom Kelly, you know, like he I mentioned it, but you could have missed it. Russ Arthur said in the 60s when they were trapping turkeys out of East Tennessee, because East Tennessee had some turkeys where they hunted, and that's the reason they had such a hunting culture there. They were trapping their turkeys and taking them away. And Russ said his dad would sit around campfires and evangelize to those guys like, hey, this is good. Because all the guys were like, they're taking our turkeys, just like we do today.
Oh, I picked up on that for sure. As a folk, you know, somebody who's in the wildlife management field and always need really strong advocates like that helping us out, and but not part of the crowd, you know. We need those advocates, and I picked up on that right off, that that's the kind of guy we like to have that understands the bigger picture.
Well, and a lot of people had sight back then, obviously, because they were doing it, but it was controversial. They didn't know if it was going to work. That's what Nathaniel's film talked about. Yeah, because they started catching all these turkeys across the country. And I think they did y'all say that there were 250,000 turkeys relocated?
Yeah.
Between like the 40s to the 60s or something, or 70s?
And there was hurdles in there too, in trying to figure out how to not break federal laws by, you know, transporting wildlife across state lines. And I think at one point they decided to get somebody that had an airplane that they could somehow get around it by flying them from place to place in the back of this guy's private plane. You know?
Wow.
So there were all these different methods until they could work out with the federal government how to do that legally.
Wow.
But it was just a bunch of, honestly, rednecks who loved the wild turkey that were like, let's figure out how to do this. Hmm. Let's take this technology and make it work. And, pretty cool.
Boy, that just reminded me of Yellville, Arkansas.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The turkey calling?
The turkey drop.
So I grew up in Yellville.
Yeah.
And back in the day.
You say that as if we should know something about Yellville.
Well, it's home of the turkey trot. The turkey trot is the annual festival in Yellville. And they had the wild turkey calling contest. Mm-hmm. But not only that, in years past, and even after it was outlawed, they would drop turkeys from airplanes in the middle of town. And people would chase these turkeys down. You know, the festival is in October, and people would chase these turkeys down and take them home and raise them for Thanksgiving. And I mean, turkeys can fly.
It really makes me
from
proud.
5,000 feet, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
They sort of plummet at an angle. But man, it was a zoo back in the day.
You were part of some of this?
I never did it. But we, you know, we'd go down to the festival and we'd see the plane, and after they outlawed it, they would tape over the N numbers on the sides of the airplane so they wouldn't get busted.
Oh, and they kept doing
and they would drop turkeys, yeah. And you'd see these turkeys. And really? people would run through town trying to get one of these turkeys. Yeah.
We looked at doing a story about it because we thought it was a cool cultural thing, but then we learned about the survival rate of the turkeys.
Yeah, it was not real
high.
Oh,
y'all wanted to do a film about
that. We thought it would be cool, like a little history story. Yeah. Someone brought it to my attention about Yellville, and we dug into it, and they're like, hey, most of them died when they hit the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like how you described that as, I've never heard free falling out of an airplane described as plummet at an angle.
That's kind of what they do. They plummet at an angle.
That's a good description.
And then they tumbled over.
Yeah, then they tumped over.
Tumped over. Hey, what about Russ?
Russ. Russ was the undercover agent.
Yeah.
That worked Louie Dell and Charlie Edwards back in the 80s
yeah.
in Mena, Arkansas.
Yeah.
That's how I know Russ. And so they sent a real turkey hunter in to infiltrate with the real turkey hunters of these guys, you know. But I started all that to tell the story. So Russ was the guy in the first episode that Turd told about finding the journal of his father and opened one of the journals up the first day. Well, yeah, and so this story, to me, in its own way, was equally as impressive that, you know, way back in this, and it was a wilderness, a federal wilderness, no roads, no GPS. They literally carried paper maps with them when they went back in there. Everywhere they went, they carried paper maps. And, you know, just the way he told it, you know, he's like, I heard this turkey, and I got up my map, and there was a little leg. I went to the leg and thought, if I can get to that hickory tree, I can kill that turkey. Gets to the hickory tree, takes his sling off, kills the turkey, tells his dad where it's at, just over the phone, just tells his dad. But they're miles back in there, not a place they know. And the next day, his dad goes in there and kills one, the same hickory tree, but not on purpose. You know, I mean, phenomenal story.
He came in from a different direction,
too,
if you remember.
Yeah.
He didn't follow his footsteps.
Right.
If I can just get to that tree.
So. Yeah, if I can just get to that hickory tree. Yeah, that was astonishing.
Yeah, those guys used the word bonded. He said, my dad and I were bonded. You know, they really, like, operate as one. So it's kind of phenomenal deal.
So when I saw the film, we had a guy on the first Turkey Stories episode, like 2 weeks ago, named Jack Hall, who's 92.
Wow.
That's a still turkey hunting. It reminded me of Fox Hayes and Tom Kelly, just that bracket. I mean, I don't know. I wonder how many active turkey hunters there still are that are in their 90s in the country. I'd have to be less than 50.
Can't be that many.
I actually heard about another guy in Arkansas. Somebody reached out to me when they heard Jack Hall. They said there's an old guy. Where I can't remember where he's from. I'm supposed to go talk to him sometime. But he was in his mid-90s, still in, like, good health turkey hunting. So there's a few around. But
when I was listening to those stories, it made me think about, you know, you've got these guys from all over the Southeast, and they all have a different dialect, a different accent. You think some people are like, oh, a Southern accent's a Southern accent, but you could start to see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And like Mr. Fox and Colonel Kelly, they have a real distinct Florida Panhandle kind of accent.
Yep.
And it just made me think about and wonder how much longer we have of that, because most of us don't speak like our granddaddies do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think probably TV and all this cultural stuff that comes to us every day ruins that, right? Because those men grew up and they learned to talk from the people
kind
that were around
isolated,
them. Right?
Primarily, other than probably some television, radio. But.
Right. But small pockets with different dialects and different accents. Mm-hmm. And like, man, there's a time ticking on that.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it. Tom Kelly has an amazing, like, it's a foreign, even being from the South, it's a bud, The buds was, how does he say bird? Can you say it, Nathaniel?
Boyd. He says Boyd. It like that, yeah.
Oh.
It sounds like foghorn leghorn.
Yeah.
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 It's really cool, though.
It's unique.
Did you do the voiceover?
I did.
Well, I thought you did.
It was going to be a scratch voiceover, and then we just left it. So.
Oh,
we,
for real?
Yeah, we didn't. We never settled on
it was
a
very
voiceover
soothing.
Artist.
It was very soothing.
Thanks.
It fit well with the film.
Well, we kept looking for somebody, and everybody tries to sound like a Home Depot commercial, you know? And,
really?
Well, yeah, it's like.
Could have used Speechify and had Snoop Dogg do it.
Snoop do it. Yeah. And we never found anybody, and we just decided to stick
Snoop
with it.
Dogg. So. That would have been good. Bear, which one stood out to you?
Well, definitely the Russ
been working
Arta
on your calls?
Do you want to call for us and have us all critique it for you?
I'm happy to help.
Definitely the Russ Arthur one was pretty wild, just that they can go back in there in the same tree, kill two turkeys. But also the David Ellis one, there's a lot about that story that was like, it was crazy. Like that the trespasser shot two turkeys with one shot. That was pretty wild to me. I didn't realize that like that would happen. And I was unclear, did the trespasser ever know that he shot him?
No.
So like that guy's still running
at
around
large
and has no clue.
Yeah.
That
and I didn't get I didn't go much past just what David told me, but I asked him, I said, did the Game and Fish like go get this guy? And basically nothing ever came of it. Like they didn't even maybe it's because they didn't have anything and David just went back to Mississippi and called the landowner. Like David didn't like try to press. He it just wasn't worth it to him. He was just trying to get back home to Mississippi, probably to go back to work, you know. So he just told the landowner, hey, there's a dude trespassing and I got 8 pellets in my face. We're headed back to Mississippi. And it wasn't like the guy got a ticket, I don't think. Because they probably would have had to, I don't know, it just would have been a bigger deal. But, yeah.
I wonder what distance you have to be from a 12-gauge blast to just catch a little bit to make you mad. But
I
not
would
actually,
not like
you
to
know.
Find out. Oh,
he said the pellets did not actually, like,
penetrate.
He said he just had little blood spots on his face.
Wow.
Like the bullets weren't in his face.
Because
I asked him, I was like, how many pellets did you get? Did they stick in your, and he said it just, I mean, imagine like getting hit with gravel, just like, bah, you know.
Like a Red Rider to the face.
Just, yeah, it was wild.
So how did his vision go dark? Did it just like
Oh, I think he
hit
was
him
just
hard
being
enough?
Dramatic. I think he just
he's being a drama queen.
I think he just probably flinched.
Yeah.
I mean, if you heard a blast pointed at you like that.
He probably just
Yeah, like, you'd definitely flinch up, you know.
Yeah, that's the way I took that.
How would a game warden react to a guy, you know, he shoots one time at one bird, he kills two.
That's
He didn't kill.
I might have seen it happen.
Yeah. I know a real life case that I might bring up. I doubt it, though. But what do you do? I mean, you can't help it. You just see a bird, and all of a sudden you go, wow, there was two birds there.
Yeah, not being a game warden, but working with a bunch over the years, just honesty is the best policy, man. The sooner you can just call somebody and say, here's what happened, I think you got a lot better chance of things coming out in your favor. It's better to just own up to it. I actually worked in Kansas at a governor's one-shot turkey hunt for years. It was this event held out.
That sounds like a good place for two turkeys to get killed with one shot.
One shot, exactly. It's a great place. And anyway, long story, I got a college scholarship through this thing, this wildlife artist. Anyhow, was guiding another different wildlife artist to go out on the hunt. And we worked all day on these birds. And finally, they came in and he took a shot and, you know, two went down. Like, well, that's not exactly what they mean by a one-shot turkey hunt. And you've got, you know, he had one tag, whatever. And there was a game warden on site for that event. And we just kind of, it was a unique situation, of course. I mean, it's the governor's hunt, but, but, you know, walked right in and just talked to him and said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're going to salvage tag this one. And
he only had one tag.
He had one tag.
So the way, for yep. people who might not know, a lot of states have a two-bird limit, but one bird per day. So, I mean, technically, it's illegal, and you're,
right.
You got to own
tell me what
it.
That means, Luke, a salvage.
If you wanted if you felt inclined to pick up a roadkill and take it home and process it, I believe one of our game wardens could write you a salvage tag for that. Don't quote me. I'm not 100%. One of them will listen to this and come
back. So the
back
guy got to keep both birds, but one of them was
Well, I think
was
one
not.
Of them, in that case, I think they just probably donated it to somebody else who was helping with the hunt and
I
said,
see.
Hey, here you go. But it's not now. It wasn't just kind of in limbo and illegally. There's just an unclaimed bird laying around at this event, right? It's
right.
like, no, this,
had
is
to
the,
have
this, is
some
a, this is a tag bird. We've claimed that, yep, here's what happened. There's a report on it. Like, this is what happened in this situation. We've all,
right.
it's been claimed one way
right.
or another. Yeah.
That's an honest mistake that happens sometimes. One of our game wardens in Missouri did it and wrote himself a ticket. And
is that right?
Yeah, it was in the newspaper.
It just happens. Wow. You know, you turkey out long enough, one of them's going to have a head.
But there's also
wrong.
There's also times where people know that they can just report it. And they, I don't know, I've seen that happen a few times. My son, I've trained him pretty good on making sure those birds aren't too close. And we were on our trip to Florida, and there was seven birds that came in this giant group.
Wow.
And I'm like, are you ready? And he's like, too close together, Dad. And I'm like, you're
a
patient kid.
It's good, boy. It's good. It's tough to wait.
It is, but I think it's really important because you're getting a wad of seven, and you could take out a big bunch of turkeys with one load.
Yeah, it's tough. Yep. So,
you know, almost have to write a ticket if you see a guy with two turkeys. I mean, I could understand it, really, because, you know, you start letting people go, and anyway, it can get out of hand.
Josh, which story was your favorite? You hadn't gone yet, have you?
No, we've talked about most of them, but I love listening
to Andy
Brown.
You can't pick Yacht or Russ Arthur.
I love listening to Andy Brown. I mean, the whole tumped over thing. And as soon as he said it, you know, that whole motion of tumping over.
You get it,
yeah. And so I love listening to him. Mm-hmm. He does such a great job with the whole buildup of everything. You know, he's describing this bird behind the tree, and, you know, you can just see this mental picture of exactly what's going on. And you got him, you know, you picture him with that gun leaning over and just
tumped over.
Yeah. So I think that was the one that I really enjoyed the most.
It was funny when he said, anytime you're telling a story and just something unusual happens, like he was like, we had to wear a suit and tie to work that day.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
I went out and I was in my black slacks, white shirt,
black tie.
And then, you know, just the details of, I saw a little piece of plyboard out there. I wanted to sit on it. And then the other time he laughed was when he said the next morning when they went in on that turkey. And that turkey apparently had flown up, within 30 yards of where he was sitting on that plyboard. And it took me a time or two to listen to it, but he said he looked over and he saw the plyboard, and he was actually on the side of the turkey.
Oh.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because if he'd have been 30 yards on the other side of the plyboard, he'd have been about 60 yards from the turkey. I think they were like 20
on
yards.
The turkey.
Like he said, that turkey was right above us.
Blew his hat off.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was funny. That was funny. Yeah, I'd have to say the three wheeler one was fun. And two 3-wheeler wrecks at one time. That makes me want to do a film, Nathaniel, of turkey hunting off Big Red 3-wheelers.
Yeah.
How cool would that be?
I love it.
What if we had, like, we're going to give away a great film idea.
Yeah.
But what if you had all your turkey hunting buddies, like five of you, on Big Red 3-wheelers?
I love it.
I mean, and you're
and
like
at the
ramping.
Premiere, someone could win a raffle of a Big Red 3-wheeler.
At the end.
You could win one.
I saw one on Facebook Marketplace a while back, and it was cherry.
Yeah.
I know a guy who runs one, co-worker and friend.
Still got
it? Still go duck hunting. He loads up the...
Is it a joke, or is it like a real thing?
That's all he's got, so that's what he uses.
He doesn't know it's cool.
Because
my cousin, Sean Marriott, he has one, and Sean's just like a cool guy. He's got like cool Forerunners and just kind of like fixes up stuff. And he had one when he was a kid. Am I right?
Yeah.
Todd and Sean had them, my first cousin.
Yeah, really as an adult, I think.
And so he bought one as like a throwback, you know, like cool to have an old Honda Big Red. Your buddy He ain't trying to be cool.
I don't know if he knows how. So it's, you know, this is just the one his dad bought way back when. He grew up in Mississippi too, and they had the Big Red, and we're gonna go duck hunting. It's just him and me, and want to ride down a rice levee. He said, "Well, I got the three wheeler." I said, "What? Do you have a three wheeler?"
Aren't those outlawed?
He was dead serious, and he loads the thing up. It's got the tires, you know, kind of like those flotation. Kind of balloon like tires on it, you know, with hardly any grip, and it's a quite a difference from today's, you know, souped up lifted UTV with the big knobby tires and the cage and all that.
Like what Gary's got.
I can't even play in that game. I mean, when Dad plays in the high end
UTV
market, I'm kind of a mule man, but. You had a Kawasaki 110 mentioned on the podcast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. And I always had I always thought everybody was like me until I got a little older, where I just loved to jump and run and two wheeler, three wheeler, and I'd go to deer camp and I'd think, well,
let's go fast.
Let's ride these things. And these guys are like, well, what's wrong with you? But Jeff Ennis had a big red. And I'd take my little Kawasaki down there, and he'd outrun me. And I didn't like
that big red would outrun that Kawasaki.
Then I got a 200 Yamaha the next year, went down there. He could still outrun me.
And so the big red?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the next year, I found a Warrior, a used Warrior,
350 Warrior.
Yeah. So I took
I remember a turkey. There's a picture of you with a turkey. Laid across that first Yamaha 350 Warrior that you had. Didn't you bend a shotgun barrel backing that thing into a tree? You did.
Probably
there was a shotgun barrel that was bent.
Yeah. Memory's getting foggy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I love those things and still do. You know, it's still one of my major hobbies.
Hey, did y'all, I mean, the render is a time for me to, kind of reflect on. The craft of building a podcast.
Yeah.
Didn't y'all think it was funny when I said Misty would be like, Clay, don't just stop. That when I said it was like a middle-aged man in the 1980s walking into a Honda dealership to buy a Big Red. Do you remember when I said that? Y'all don't remember that?
I remember that.
It was funny, wasn't it, Luke?
It was funny.
Yes. It was funny.
Sure.
It was thanks,
Luke.
Yeah.
Luke, you're the favorite.
I was saying I can't even remember what I was saying, but it was funny.
Go back and listen to it, folks.
Yeah. I was saying someone got suckered into something, like a middle-aged man in the 1980s walking into a Honda dealership to buy a Big Red. A middle-class man. You had to be middle-class on one of those.
You're talking about a turkey coming in.
Maybe so.
Was the Big Red a pull start?
Oh, yeah.
It was a pull start,
wasn't it? I think so. I don't really remember.
The 110s, I think, were all pull start.
Yeah, I've watched that one be pull started in the last couple of years. Yeah. It fires right up and it purrs.
Yeah.
It sounds great. It's amazing.
Wow. Well, they're pretty cool.
Wow, 7-minute lull.
Well, Nathaniel, where can people watch your film?
It's on Mossy Oak's YouTube channel. It's been up for a few days.
How many views it got? Close to 200?
Around 200,000, yeah.
Like 200 views.
Yeah. Is that, yeah. And most I watched it like four times, so that's like, you know, like 2% of the views are for me.
There you go.
If you have 200 views.
Yeah.
What was the goal of the film? Like when you were commissioned to make this, were they like, we're going to be happy if this many people watch it?
I don't think we had any kind of thing in, you know, viewership in mind. Everything that I've been able to do for Mossy Oak has been less about moving a needle or numbers and more about really like solidifying the legacy that they have, you know, and the story of who they want to be and who they are. So we just wanted to tell the story of those two men. And I think even Toxie said,
"You, Nathaniel, you had a number in your head."
Well,
I caught him. See that?
I don't know.
No, I mean, I feel like you got to be pretty happy with that. Too.
Very happy.
I mean, because it's just started.
If that's the question, happy with the numbers. Yeah. I mean, it's turkey hunting is a niche market. It's like a community, a small community of people. So we're thinking, you know, if most of the people within that community love it, see it, get to respond to it, then that would be a big win. And I think it's gone beyond that. So
I, you know, we make a lot of films at Meat Eater, and so I'm, aside from just loving hunting and telling stories and all these things, I kind of geek out about YouTube stuff I don't really talk about because it's not that interesting unless you're in the locker room. And now that I've got Nathaniel here, fellow video man. When I first saw it, I knew it was going to be incredible. I wasn't sure how. I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't think it was going to do good, but it's just hard to. There's so many variables. Like you put that film on a small YouTube channel, and if it's the best film in the world, it still doesn't do good because it doesn't have a huge YouTube audience that it's feeding it out to.
Yeah.
Also, you know, there's always this thing about a shorter film versus a longer film. You know, is it intimidating for somebody to start off watching an hour and 20 minute film? So I was kind of thinking, I wonder how it's going to do. And I was rooting for it big time by watching it and telling people about it. I thought it was a big win that after a week it's got 200,000 views.
It's a huge win. And for me, my work is always slower paced, and sort of in our social media climate right now that is not attractive in a certain way to people.
Really? So when you were making the film, you felt like you were kind of bucking the trend of just fast paced stuff.
I'll put work into a 5 or 10 minute piece that I feel really good about, and sometimes a brand is like, let's do it in 30 seconds because TikTok has got a quick, you know, got to get to people quick. And I'm like, dang it, I wanted this to land with people in an emotional way. We can't do that in 30 seconds. And so my work is always longer form and moving at a slower pace. And so, but I just felt after we got done with this, and so did everybody at Mossy Oak, that there's a place in this community for something like that. And this kind of proved that that's true. So,
Cool.
If you, I was a little bit fascinated with that Mr. Fox turkey vest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
going for, how much did it go for?
$31,000.
So they were numbered. I got on eBay to see
$4,500.
What it would take for one to acquire one. Yeah. And they're anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000.
Yeah.
On eBay.
We ought to go to the guy that's selling that and just whip him.
Yeah. We're coming after you.
I mean, you don't get that vest and sell it, do you? Am I wrong?
You
Bear?
Shouldn't.
How many were there?
1,986, because 1986 was the year the Mossy Oak was founded. I see. So.
Yeah, that was a excuse me. That was a cool little piece. They made a turkey vest honoring Fox Hayes. And just sold out of them. Like,
yeah, they thought they were going to just, you know, have an inventory to sell, and there was people camped out the night before to get them, and they auctioned one off at NWTF, right?
Yeah,
and it went for $31,000, and all the rest of them just were gone.
It was the number five vest. That's why one of the reasons why it went for so much, because it was the top 20 of them were given to close family and stuff, but the number five was reserved for the Grand National Auction.
Hey, Bear, go get my turkey vest right there. I want to show y'all this. This is FHF. This is FHF Gear's new turkey. It's a turkey belt. So
I like that.
It's a belt. And you can molly on all your different attachments. So it's got a pouch with all my, you know, calls and shells and gloves and different stuff. But it's on suspenders. And then I'm getting a little backpack attachment, just a small backpack attachment. But it's just like ultra light. I was talking to turkey vests. Turkey hunters are big into turkey vests. I got my little slate call pouch right there in front. But that's like minimalist turkey vest, Dad. What do you think?
I like it. Be sure to put that back in there, or you're going to run out, have the bird gobbling, and you won't have your little striker.
Have wrong striker.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's not good. Hey, I like that. That is really
that's
neat.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Well, Luke, closing thoughts? What do you want to tell us about the Game and Fish?
Tell us everything that we need to know about Game and Fish in 10 seconds.
Everything.
thank you for your support. Yeah, I mean, I think just turkeys are in a state of flux. We all know that as turkey hunters. And I think it's just as a turkey hunter myself and a wildlife biologist, it's kind of, we're all just going to have to work through this together.
Yep.
Like we're in a new reality, I think. And so I just think it's a time for everybody to kind of work together on it, realize that the new normal is different. Maybe when a bunch of us started out turkey hunting in.
Yeah.
And, but it can still mean it's good. It can still mean it's sustainable for a really, really long time. And so we're just going to have to keep pushing through to, if there's things we can solve, we'll work on solving them together.
Right on. Well, good to see everybody. Thank Nathaniel. Thanks for coming. Luke, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All the regulars, thanks for coming. You know, my dad should probably get an award. He drives further and more often. When Brent's here, Brent drives about actually a little bit further than dad.
Yeah.
You'd get
yeah.
second place.
Yeah, second.
You get second place.
Yeah.
But no, great conversation, guys. And yeah, check out The Colonel and the Fox on YouTube, Mossy Oak's YouTube channel. And yeah.
Thanks for having me here.
Awesome, guys.
Yeah. We'll see you next time.
This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Greece. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.